It's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM.
We're back for the second half hour of the program this morning, and I have two guests to talk to us about an important issue, something that maybe folks want to add to their list of New Year's resolutions. If you still have room on your list, get your advance directive filled out this year, folks, especially anybody who's approaching my age or my good buddy Dana's age in our early 60s here. And maybe he didn't appreciate that very much, but oh well. And you fill out an advance directive, and it basically is a documentary record of what you have decided you would want to happen in a circumstance when you are incapacitated and people need to make medical decisions about you. So, obviously, normally you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, well, you kind of need the surgery, and you sign a form saying, I consent to the surgery, etc. That can't happen if you're in a coma or whatever. So we have to figure out ahead of time what decisions might look like. And so a couple of the two guests I have in the studio this next half hour, and by the way, we welcome questions and comments for them. 244-1777 is a local number here in Waterbury. 1-877-291-8255 is the toll-free number. I want to welcome Cindy Bruzzese to the program this morning. She is with the Vermont Ethics Network, which is, I think, been around 25 or 30 years now?
Yeah, 33 years.
33 years, wow. The group really helped to introduce this whole topic to the state of Vermont, I think, back in the day. I remember writing a story or two about that for the Associated Press and my former employer. Cindy, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And I think we have on the phone, Emily.
Emily McKenna. I'm the marketing and communications manager at Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice.
And so at CVHHNH, this topic is also a very important one to you folks. I'm sure that your staff are frequently saying to your patients, clients, hey, you really ought to think about filling out this paperwork here.
I think that's definitely the case. We see people from, you know, newborns and their mothers to people facing the end of life and everyone in between. Mm-hmm. And it's important to us to work with people and to try to help them understand, you know, why it's so important to fill out an advance directive. And we partner often with Cindy and the Vermont Ethics Network to try to help people have their questions answered or to understand better, you know, what they should be doing and why it's so important. So.
And is this something that you are promoting with people of all ages, or is it mainly as people get to be, you know, in their 50s, 60s, 70s kind of thing?
I'm sure Cindy, I would like Cindy to talk about this, but from my perspective, it's really something that we encourage everyone to do, regardless of their age, and certainly not just for people over 50 or 60. You know, I filled out my advance directive a few years ago after I had my first child. It felt mm-hmm. like, along with filling out my will, it felt like an important conversation to have with my husband and with the people, you know, with my sister and other family members. I think and Cindy can talk about this, I think it's important not to wait until it's too late or until you are getting closer to a crisis. It really gives you a sense of some peace of mind if you've thought about some of the questions that you have to think about when you're filling out your advance directive, and if you've communicated some of that information and your wishes to the people around you.
Cindy Bruzzese with Vermont Ethics Network, what are some of the questions Emily's referring to there? What are you going to have in mind as you go through this process?
So I think Emily's exactly right when it comes to advanced care planning, and that is really a term that we use when we talk about the process of just thinking about and planning for future healthcare decisions at a time when you may not have the capacity to speak for yourself. And what we've learned over the years is that sudden accident and illness can happen to anyone at any time, regardless of your age or baseline health. So I agree with Emily that anyone 18 years of age or older who's capable of making their own decisions should really start the process of advanced care planning and take the first step in at least appointing a healthcare agent. So that's one of the questions. Who do you trust to make decisions for you if you're not able to make decisions for yourself? And that really can be anyone in your family, and I would define family quite broadly to include friends and people with a close relationship to you that can speak on your behalf if you're unable to speak for yourself. So that's probably one of the most important things that people can do in terms of starting the process of advanced care planning is appointing a healthcare agent.
And does this, I know there's a form that you fill out because I have received that form and all right, I'm confessing now. I haven't done this. And maybe,
you're so lucky that I brought forms with me to leave with you today, Dave.
Maybe doing this I was thinking maybe doing this program will finally get me off my duff and I'll actually finally do this. I'm not sure what sort of resistance is. You know, is it just procrastination or is there some other level of, what do people tell you about why they wait?
I think there's a bunch of reasons why people wait, and I think mostly has to do with the fact that we always reserved this kind of thing, planning for future decision making, to end of life. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, people think if I'm doing advanced care planning or I'm completing advanced directives, it must be that I'm preparing for end of life. And actually, what we've learned is you don't need to be dying to do advanced care planning. You just need to envision a time when you may not be able to make decisions for yourself, whether it's short term or long term. And so we know that if you're biking, you can go over the handlebars and get hit on the head and have a hard time making decisions for a short term. And we want to know who's going to speak for you if that happens.
Yeah.
So I think that's really the big barrier is people always equated it really with end of life. And what we've learned is you don't need to be dying to do advanced care planning. And so we've really adjusted our tools, the documents that people complete to make them a little less daunting. So, for instance, the completion of a healthcare agent, we have a very simple form. It's one page. I don't think there's even a question on there about dying. Mm-hmm. And we've noticed that people feel much more comfortable thinking about who should speak for me in the event that I can't speak for myself. That seems like a easier hurdle to get over. And then I think the other piece is we just haven't culturally spent a lot of time talking about these things. And so we're really trying to change that, working with Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice and the other agencies across the state, just to really normalize this conversation that things happen that we can't plan for or that we didn't expect.
Right.
And there are some steps we can take to feel like we have a little bit more control over what happens at a time when otherwise we wouldn't have control.
And I think I just want to say something that Cindy has always reiterated when I've had conversations with her or been out presenting with her is that filling out the advance directive and appointing a healthcare agent, it can be and it kind of should be a process that you go through and update. It's a lifelong process. You know, the things that I want now may change when I'm 15 years older and 30 years older. And so I think there's a process in place to update and make changes to your healthcare agent form and advance directive. And so I think that's really helpful information to put out there as well.
And is this something that I'm just thinking now, let's say I filled this out 15 years ago and I want to look at it and see, you know, would I still think that I have it filled out correctly? You know, am I still in the same frame of mind I was 15 or 30 years ago when I first filled it out? Who's the actual custodian of this? Do you go to your primary care provider or how do you connect this with the healthcare system in Vermont?
So that great question. You're essentially the custodian of this paperwork for mm-hmm. yourself. So mm-hmm. you complete a document, you make copies, you keep the original for yourself, you give copies to your healthcare providers, your family, whoever you've chosen to may be your decision maker. And Vermont is one of the few states in the country that has a registry. So that's an online database where you can send your document. It's free of charge for all Vermont residents. They scan in a copy of your document, and then you receive from the registry a wallet ID card with an identification code that's unique to your document, which allows hospitals anywhere and healthcare providers across Vermont as well as outside of Vermont, since it's an online database, mm-hmm. to access your document in the event of a hospitalization where they need to know what your wishes are. So that's one way. And when you make changes, I think you make a really great point. What we want when we're 20 may change when we're 40 or 60 or 80.
Yeah.
And so it's really important to revisit these documents over time and to feel like this is really a process and an evolving kind of thing rather than a one and done type of event. And so there's the opportunity for you to check in. And then the nice thing about the registry is every year they will send you a letter just saying, hey, you have a document in the registry. Do you have any changes? So it's a nice reminder and a prompt to go back and look at what you've done and make any changes if you feel they're necessary.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. I would imagine some people, you know, might even get divorced and remarried or something and kind of forget about this. And now you might have the wrong name as the person you want to be your healthcare agent in these circumstances. And actually, speaking of which, I would gather that probably the majority of folks would choose a spouse if they're married as their healthcare agent. But, you know, there are some incredibly tragic circumstances where there's a, you know, car crash or a plane crash or whatever, where both spouses and a couple pass. Do you pick then sort of a secondary person, or how do you address something like that?
So Vermont law is really permissive, if you will, in terms of how you can want to set these documents up. So you can appoint an agent or co-agent. So those are the people that have the primary responsibility for making decisions for you if you can't speak for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can set up sort of your own hierarchy, if you will, where you have an agent and then you have an alternate agent. So you have a backup person in the event that first go-to person isn't available.
Right.
So it's really up to you to set it up however you want. I think I don't have any statistics, but certainly as I just travel around the state anecdotally working with community members, I think it's sort of 50-50 in terms of who people select. Many people do select a spouse, but oftentimes people feel like, gee, it may be really difficult for my spouse to make this decision in the heat of the moment where emotions are running very high.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
Oftentimes people pick a close friend or a different family member to allow that spouse to have sort of the ability to just be the spouse in the event of a health crisis and have someone else be making the decision. So it really is up to you. There's no right or wrong answer. It's really what's right for that individual.
That is, I'm glad you raised that consideration, Cindy, because, and certainly I would think a person who's filling out the form and actually doing the advance directive needs to have a fairly serious conversation with the person they are identifying as their healthcare agent. You know, are you really willing to do this? It might not be easy when the time comes. And, so that's obviously something that you should talk about.
You definitely should talk about it. And I don't think I can overstress the importance of having conversations about these issues and topics just over time. I think that's such an important thing. I mean, in my role as an ethicist, sometimes we do find the person who shows up at the hospital, or we're calling for information. And when they get the call from the hospital, it's the first time they found out that they're actually serving as someone's decision maker. That is definitely far from optimal.
That would be a nasty surprise for yeah. a lot of folks, I would think.
Yeah, not easy. These aren't easy decisions. Serving
yeah.
as someone's healthcare agent is not necessarily a gift. It's a hard job. So you really need to think about who can be that advocate, who can be your voice in sometimes a chaotic healthcare environment where stakes are high and maybe decisions need to be made quickly. So you really want that person who really can speak to your values and knows what's important to you and what matters most and the things that you would or wouldn't find acceptable.
We have a caller on the line. Let's go to Xenia in Barrie. Good morning, Xenia.
Hi. I was advanced directive healthcare agent for my mother, who died in 2011. And before that, I was healthcare agent for a friend that kept ending up in Vermont State Hospital. And from those things, remember to include if you're viewed as suicidal and end up in the hospital, Put down your wishes for that, too. And also be prepared to fight for your person's wishes, I had to go to Disability Rights Vermont, and we had to sue the state hospital because they weren't following the law and observing her health care wishes. And with my mother, you know, medical people are used to being in charge, and they tend to ignore the advance directive. My mother was given some knockout drug in the middle of the night when she was in the hospital 2 weeks before her death, and they didn't check with me. It was a drug that had side effects of aspiration pneumonia, which would have been horrible for her. And, you know, you got to take your responsibilities seriously and be prepared, if necessary, to go to bat for your person's wishes.
Okay, Cindy, let me get you to respond to some of this. And Emily, actually, have you seen circumstances wherein it feels to someone who is the healthcare agent that the medical providers are not actually sufficiently following the instructions?
I don't know, Emily, did you want to start answering
that? Well, I think I would like you to answer it. I mean, I will say quickly, anecdotally, when I have been out in the community and talking to people, I have often heard people share from their own life experience and circumstances, and it's always unfortunate to hear that this happens, but I think it reiterates to me why it's so important to kind of start this process early and to kind of revisit it, you know, over the course of your life and relationship with someone. But Cindy can probably talk more specifically.
Sure. So I too have heard the same stories where people have expressed concern that a loved one's advance directive wasn't honored, or they didn't think it was being honored the way that the individual wanted. And I do think that those are unfortunate circumstances when that happens. I will say the one challenging thing, it's kind of advanced care planning and advance directives. Those documents are a bit of a double-edged sword in the sense that they're nuanced documents. So they really do sometimes require a little more context than what is on the actual piece of paper. And so that's sort of the beauty of the document is that they're nuanced, and the challenge of the document is that they're nuanced. And so sometimes we're not really sure what people meant when they wrote something down. Sometimes we also get information on advance directives that is contradictory in the sense that sometimes people will write things that they would like to have CPR, but they don't want to go to the hospital or be put on a breathing machine. Well, those are not actually compatible goals. We can't do both of those things. We can't resuscitate someone, but then not take them to the hospital or use a breathing machine. So sometimes what may look to someone who isn't a healthcare or isn't working in healthcare like we're not honoring something may actually be that we had to sort of make a decision in the moment and then try to do the best that we could. And I do think that healthcare providers all across Vermont really work very hard to try to respect people's wishes as best that they can. But that's not to say that sometimes they don't get it wrong or that there's a difference of opinion. And that's where we need to really work to try to come to consensus about what the right thing to do is for this individual.
I wonder also whether, you know, in a circumstance like this, if are medical personnel adequately trained? In other words, you've been out there working in the field for all these years, Cindy Brusese, trying to get folks to express their wishes in advance. Has there been concomitant training for medical personnel, nurses and doctors who are then going to be looking at these instructions down the road at some point? And does that need to be strengthened at all, or is it sufficient right now?
I would never say we've done enough when it comes to education about this topic. I do think that healthcare providers are getting more and more trained. I think the tide has definitely shifted in terms of people really recognizing that if we want to provide good person-centered care, we really need to talk to people about what matters to them and to do our best to try to make sure that the care and treatment that we're providing is in alignment with what people want. To that end, my work doesn't just entail going out and doing education with the community, but I spend a lot of time working with healthcare providers, nurses, social workers, physicians, as well as healthcare facilities, home health agencies like Center Vermont Home Health, nursing homes, residential care homes, and hospitals themselves, working with staff in varying at the emergency department and right on through to try to help them really understand what these documents are and to be looking at their systems to make sure that they have a mechanism to make sure they're checking and that they're doing their best to honor these documents when they find them.
Xenia, you had another point you wanted to make.
Yeah, again, when I was DPOA for my mother, when she came to the nursing home from the hospital after an operation and treatment for pneumonia, part of my duties as a healthcare agent was to read the chart. And I came there the first night, and the staff was not at all trained at that, who were on duty there. When I asked to see the chart, they acted like I was doing something underhanded. And even though I was her healthcare agent and she had some dementia, I went back the next day when there were more trained people on, and they apologized. And when I did look at the chart, I saw that they had stamped all through it, do not resuscitate. Well, those were not her wishes at the time. And I raised a polite little stink about that and got them to remove that. So I think there isn't nearly enough training. And it is the law for any healthcare facility that takes Medicare money, it's in the conditions of participation in Medicare, that if your state has an advance directive law, that staff be trained in what that law says, and so on and so on. It's.
I think we get the point,
legal.
Xenia.
I
thank you for the call. I've got to move on, but I appreciate your thoughts here. And actually, we have another caller on the line, Rama from Williamstown. Good morning, Rama.
Yeah, I want to just add a little bit more onto the chain of what they're discussing with these final directives. I'm speaking from firsthand experience with my mother's, and I won't go into details on the story, but having detailed instructions as well as a lot of over-the-time personal discussions about this helped, it definitely beyond a shadow of a doubt, helped my mother's wishes be carried out the way she wanted to do it. No doubt about it. But I just want to throw in as an extra pitch here, because I know when we were up at the hospital, they had an ethicist and an ethics committee that sat down and helped me work through, because you reach, when you're in a position of making some determinations on somebody else's life, you reach this Rubicon. There's this line you cross. And boy, I had so much problem getting to the point where I thought I should step across that line. So I want to give a shout out to the ethicists, the ethics people that will come in and help out too.
Yeah, they actually can sit down with you and kind of talk you through, just kind of help you work out how to think about the questions or whatever.
Right. So I'll get out of the way and let them carry on.
All right. Thanks for the call, Rama. It's good to hear. I always say I welcome a range of views here on the Dave Graham Show on WDEV, and we heard maybe a less successful story from Xenia there a moment ago, and then here's Rama, which sounds like he had a more successful story to tell about how he interacted with this process. So it's a mix out there, folks. I think that's the bottom line here. Emily, do you have any? We're actually going to be running out of time soon. I wanted to see if you wanted to get your oar back in the water here with any thoughts here.
What I want to say in response to the first caller where she didn't have an ideal experience is that, you know, no system is perfect. And I think that her story kind of reiterates the need for us, for Cindy and for me and for all of our kind of organizations to work together to just continue to reiterate and to educate everyone. And I hope that people like Rama and Zinnia will both become advocates for their family and friends to fill out advanced directives. I think, you know, we are a culture of people of planners. We plan for retirement. You know, we plan for college. We plan our weddings. And I think we need to make a shift to kind of include this advanced care planning as part of that process. I think it really, I would love to see it become a lifelong process, and kind of that's why, you know, I wanted to be here today to talk with you both, to really just encourage people to take whatever first step feels right for them. So,
well, I think it's an important message, and I appreciate the two of you actually coming on this morning to share it. And Cindy, what about you? Do you have any sort of last thoughts here in terms of as we get ready to wrap up the segment? What would you like people to hear?
Well, I would just echo what Emily said, and that it always feels like it's too soon until it's too late. And we always hope for the best, but hoping isn't necessarily a plan. And so the best thing we can do is have conversations with those people who care about us and that we care about, and to put those decisions down in writing so that if and when the time comes, people feel confident in knowing that they made the right choices for you in the event that you couldn't speak for yourself.
All right, I'm going to get this process going for myself here. That's the,
That's great.
At least you got one convert here. So, well, Emily McKenna of CBHH&H and Cindy Prusese of the Vermont Ethics Network, I want to thank you so much for joining me here on the Dave Graham Show.
Thanks for having us. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be back after the top of the hour break.